Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we're continuing our coverage of the 10th, first and only. Actually, you're probably going to conclude it, guys. Spoiler alert.
It is a funny conversation we had, everybody. John calls me up and we're talking about what we're doing. He's like, hey, man, like, we're in our third cast and we're not done with the third. Yeah, sorry, fourth cast.
And fourth cast,
and we're not done with the third book. What do you want to do? And I was like, we should probably do something else. Or we could just be the Gaunt's Ghost podcast for the next year.
So today we're going to finish up the story of Vergast and give you guys a bit more of a taste of what comes next for the ghost, but really spend a lot of time on this conflict because this conflict is huge for this story, but also is a really good story about the Imperium in general. So I love it a lot and we're going to cover that today. And then, spoiler, move on to something else afterwards. But as always, 40K Lorecast, weekly show focusing on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please follow and comment because, yay, it's helpful. Also, links in the show notes to really cool things like a YouTube channel that we will do a Q&A for maybe this month. I say this month, and we're just going to go with depending on when you listen to it. a link to Brad's channel, where he's covering the competitive side of the game. A link to our history of 40K, where we're talking about the history of the game, the tabletop, and mostly just messing around. A link to my show, Retro Recall, where I'm messing around in old video games. And of course, if you want to support us, a link to our merchandise and our Patreon.
We have stickers.
We do. Brad also has a mute button that he's never figured out yet, but it's fine. Anyway, this is like the 50th time I've had him sneeze into a microphone. There we go.
Look, I'm fine now. It'll all work better out.
I figured at some point I would tell you there was a mute button you could just press this on.
Fine. All right. Instead of just swinging the microphone wildly far away from myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. This is what I like. All right. But as always, our Patreon is $4.99 a month. It gets you this show and the history of 40K ad free or 4,556.67 Chilean pesos. Because today we're going to Santiago, Chile. Because last week's cast, I decided to look up what the coldest country in the Southern Hemisphere is. And apparently it's Chile, but it's kind of bullshit because it's just the part where Patagonia is. Turns out, Brad, the Northern Hemisphere is a lot colder than the Southern Hemisphere. And I'm just not cool with this. Because it's not just us. We also have listeners in Sweden and whatnot. There's no Sweden in the Southern Hemisphere. Oh, South Africa gets cold. No, it doesn't. I have friends in South Africa. No. They own sweaters. They don't own Carhartt. So, but anyway, I mentioned Santiago, Chile, and we're doing Santiago, Chile. Santiago is the largest city and it's the capital in all of Chile. And it's a lovely place. It's an hour and a half from the coast. It's a really, really nice coastline, by the way. Lovely seafood. So you get cooling breezes. Great little spot. But you don't get the nightmare. If anyone's ever lived coastal, you get a lot of salt water coming and wrecking your house. You also get a lot more drizzle and BS. So kind of being that far off the coast is nice. Founded in 1541, Santiago is this really vibrant city. Large green spaces, historical areas, but also a lot of skyscrapers and modern amenities. And all of that with a cool view of the Andes Mountains, because they're right there. Cuisine, really great. As you guys know, I like food, and they lean heavily into kind of a few different things. One, fresh fruit. There's watermelon everywhere. They've also got this weird concoctions, this thing called Monte Conjueso, which is a summer drink, which is wheat and dried peaches, which sounds gross, but it's actually quite delicious. They're also full of bread for some weird reason. I don't know why they eat they're the second most consumed. They consume the second most bread on the world next to the Germans. I didn't realize it was the Germans who eat the most bread either. So there you go, Brad. Don't go there.
I've been there.
Yeah. How's that gluten allergy going for you?
Super good. Loving it. Really.
Super
loving
fun.
The fact that I got developed allergies late in life. That didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Lame. Awesome. Go team.
Things are going perfect.
Chileans are also, and I'm assuming this is a German influence, they like mayonnaise a lot and put it on everything, including hot dogs. Gross. But they also put avocado on the hot dogs. And I've had these hot dogs and they're really good. It's really good. Hot dogs are kind of weird anyway. So whatever.
I do kind of like on everything though. So
avocado is always a win. They've also got sopapillas. They've got pastel de choclo. They've got really great food. And if you go there, there's a ton of stuff to do. If you want something wild, go up the Atacama. I've actually been there. The Atacama Desert's like one of the most desolate places on earth. I don't think it's rained there for like millions of years, something like that. They've got beautiful beach and coastline. You can hike, you can parasail, paraglide. I'm afraid of heights, so none of those are going to happen. But you can go nuts. And it's got one of the best economies in all of South America, and it's one of the safest places to visit. So really great place to go. Enjoy. Have fun. And of course, I always finish up with our Discord. Hop into the Discord. Ask us questions. We will answer them. Ask other people questions. They will answer them because that's what Discord's for. And you know how much it's going to cost you to join our Discord? $0 because that's what Discords are supposed to be. Come on in. Learn more about lore. Ask terribly dumb questions and have no one get flame you for it because it's not your fault. You're new to the game and don't know something. Instead of Reddit, which is seriously a nightmare. I've had to spend a lot more time in Reddit recently because of 11th edition. It is not fun. Just not fun. But all right, back to the cast. Quick recap of where we were. Last week, the Tanith had been deployed to Varenhive, along with the Vulpine Bluebloods and a few others. Varenhive was under attack from another hive called the Ferrozoikans, which are actually full-blown chaos force. On the plus side...
And a big thing on this, not just chaos, it's full-blown chaos. And I know that sounds like you said the same thing, Brad. Usually there's the tops, you get the loyal, or you get the underhive kind of getting to chaos. No, this is a whole hive. Period into chaos, which has not been seen at this point in the writing. This is a big deal on this. We haven't seen a huge uprising like this, where everything takes over.
So the positives are the Varenhive is secure, the void shield's up, and the walls are intact.
Unlike others that did not put their void shield up.
Yeah, one of the other hives that took nuclear weapons to the dome. That one doesn't exist anymore. The negative is there are at least 3 million cultists on the other side of the wall that are being led by Chaos Magister Herator Asphodel, who's a master of arcane technology, and no one inside the walls know this. So they just think it's a ragtag chaos force outside the wall.
Which but they shouldn't, because he has demon engines outside.
Well, they haven't hit the wall yet. That's what I'm saying. The demon engines haven't hit the wall yet. They figure this out. They don't figure out it's him till later, but they figure out there's a problem pretty quick. Now, what makes it even more complicated is there's way too many cooks in the kitchen. So we have Colonel Commissar Ibram Gaunt. We've got General Nash of the Rhone Deepers, General Grismond of the Narmenian Armored, right. General Sturm of the Royan Volpone. And that's just the guard. Then you have the PDF.
Then you have all of the idiots inside.
Yeah. Cass.
The room.
Sondar.
Yeah.
Pius.
Everybody inside the walls that's not a guard character is a moron, and Commissar should have shot.
With the exception, and we're gonna touch on him a lot later, the guy who leads the militia.
Yes.
He is cool. That's the only one. He's the only one on the inside who's not a complete piece of garbage.
It's just, there's so much political nonsense going on while people are, I refuse to let you save my life unless you give me a sticker that says I'm awesome.
Yeah,
they legitimately just give a lot of these people a pat on the back to do this. That's why it infuriates me.
And that's why the biggest problem of this is, so technically the highest ranking officer here is General Sturm. He should be able to take full control. By the way the Imperium is written, he is a commanding general in the Imperial Guard. He has been deployed there. The way it is written is the local PDF and militia automatically report to him. He should take full control of the city. But the thing, and Sturm, to his credit, is not an idiot. What he knows is they're on the ass end of nowhere.
They also came and just down because with a small force.
But it doesn't matter. The thing is, but just because the rules say that, doesn't mean the rules will get followed.
Yes, but that they're coming down with a small force means a little bit, because he knows that if he just starts shooting people in the head, big mutiny could happen, and they have a small force. So pretty tired of you shooting people. Let's just kill the guy that's shooting people.
Yeah. And what ends up making it a lot worse is everyone's kind of got different goals outside of not die, although they're not even necessarily ranked where not die is the top one. You've got Commissar Pius,
who just sucks.
He just wants this whole thing to make him so glorious that he gets to rejoin the crusade as like a general.
He was doing character creation, and he put max points into douche and moron.
Yeah. Then you've got High Master Sandar, who just wants the hive preserved and tithes keep getting paid. Sandar is a weird character. It's almost like he expects to win. And his whole thing is like, I just want to go back to the way things were when this is over.
I was basically kind of running the planet. And he sucks, but for a different way, because it's almost apathy for Sandar. He doesn't think any of this, all of this is an inconvenience. You guys are all drama queens. Stop, you know.
Exactly.
Do whatever you do. But like, he keeps popping in because he goes, well, don't do this because it'll make it harder when I get back fully in control. Basically, hey, don't wreck don't ruin the grass in the lawn because it's going to be awesome later. You're like, dude, they're going to burn down the house, man. Stop worrying about the lawn.
And then you have General Sturm, who's looking to have a really decisive victory over a Chaos Force because he's been struggling as of late to live up to the expectations placed on him.
He just had a huge loss.
That's right. Yeah, he did have a huge loss. And the other problem for him, don't forget, is he's also been sent here with the expectation of an easy win and got here to find 3 million cultists. He's grossly outnumbered. And then you have Gaunt. Now, let's call a spade here. The novels are about Gaunt and the Tanith.
The main characters actually know what's going on.
Yeah,
the only people that know what's going on.
Yeah, so Gaunt and the Tanith are obviously the ones who seem to figure out all the stuff that's going on throughout it and blah, blah, blah. But the first kind of big issue, the conflict that comes up, is Gaunt, Grismond of the Narmenium Armored, and Nash of the Rhone Deepers. They believe that the best defense is a good offense. The Narmenian Armored being there, because this is a very, very, very good armor division, they say, look, we've got an opportunity. The Ferrozoicans are still advancing on the city. They haven't dug in yet, and so they can't really bring their big guns to bear. This is when you do a mobile counterattack. Grismond could exit the city, flank the enemy, and just come and just start wrecking shop. Then they really want to go back into them.
Yeah, you also take the cities has giant gun emplacements. They could just start bombing them.
In that city, we could take the fight to them. Let's weaken their forces. Even if this doesn't completely defeat them, we can cut them in half. We could do a ton to them. But Sturm and the civic leaders all stand in opposition to this. They don't, their viewpoint is we don't want to reduce our defenses at all. They want to stand, basically, they just want to sit there and let the waves crash against the beach. That's their viewpoint.
Well, Gaunt has one of my favorite lines of this because he tries to be, he's actually respectful of it because he's trying to be part of this meeting, which goes to shit in just a minute. But he points out, hey man, if they do breach, everyone dies. So,
yeah. We have nowhere to retreat to. We're at the wall. There's nowhere further back. Maybe put some space between us and the enemy. But anyway, Gaunt accepts this, to Brad's point, and he deploys his Tanith all over the place to kind of aid not just the defenses, but also the citizens. Because the Ferrozoicans are not there, you know, to have a campfire and make s'mores outside the city walls. They're there to kill. And the Tanith immediately find a city that's just grossly unprepared for what's coming.
And this is a lot of Sandor's fault on this because they still have not mobilized people. People don't even know what's going on. They have no idea. The regular populace is just like, hey, what's going on? I'm just going to go make some sandwiches. You're like, you should do some stuff.
You might want to shelter. Yeah. Exactly.
None of this is happening.
Well, and the irony of the whole thing is that the way that the hive is built to function is when an attacker comes, the walls go up, and then we go and we attack you actually, like, exactly what Gaunt was calling to go do is how all of these hives are meant to do war. They're actually not meant to take abuse against the wall. Because, quick side note about a void shield, you can walk through a void shield. You just can't shoot through it. So the city's not built to be a defender. It's built to do short-term defense. So the Tanith find themselves embedded with a civilian population that is starting to starve, by the way, and they're starting to break.
Well, this is a bigger thing. I'm going to go back just a little bit on this because of the fact that Sanders doing a bad job of running this place because he's hands off. There's no reason that they should already be having supply issues in the first place. This is a mismanagement. This is why I can't stand these people. Oh, yeah. This. They start to run out of stuff instantaneously when there's absolutely no reason that it should be this way. Yeah.
And of course, because it's a story about the Tanith and Gaunt, the Tanith coming from a forest world, they're newer to this. Their viewpoint, they have a lot more sorrow for the people in the hive. The other regiments are just like, yeah, hives suck. What? Like, people are starving. Next problem. The Tanith are the ones who are like, well, we should help them, shouldn't we? You know, it's like, whereas everyone's like, no. It's a hive city, don't care.
Yeah,
and they do. They actually do make efforts to try and make life better.
The defense force is a trash fire too. And it's a trash fire because no one's gotten them ready for stuff. These guys are ready to break before the fight starts, not during or anything.
And I do like this scene a lot because what happens is the Pharazoikans start shelling the city. So for 24 days, it's the void shield. For 24 days, the void shield just takes a bombardment. And anyone who studied World War I knows this process. They shell it, and then the shelling stops. When the shelling stops, that means the attack is coming. And so but it didn't come. And a day passes, there's no attack. And another day passes, and no attack. The third day passes, and no attack. And as this is going to Brad's point, the defenders start losing it. They start running away. And so they start having to execute a lot of the defenders because they start running away because they're just sitting on a wall, staring out from a wall, waiting for the attack to come that does not come. So, and it's happening.
Let's clarify on the shields, though. So they have big walls, like regular physical walls. Void shields are to stop munitions from showing up. They're stop kinetic and laser, everything else. But you can just walk through them. You can get inside of them. They don't stop you moving slow, basically, when you go in. So they're just going to walk past the shields and deal with the actual physical walls of the hive. And, well, that does happen. On day five. Yeah.
On day five, they show up. And what they show up with is terrifying. Now, I'll be honest, the first time I read this, I thought it was defilers they showed up with. They're described as crab walkers.
Also, screw you on this. It just is. I'm sorry. Now, I know that Reddit says you're wrong. The description is a freaking defiler.
Period. Good. Because when I read it, I'm like, it's a defiler. And then I go on Reddit.
Crab walkers research with a cannon on their chest? Screw off, dude. It's a defiler.
So they show. They show up with defilers. And no one's seen a defiler.
You can tell us we're wrong, but this is just a defiler, man.
So they show up with these crab walker defilers and start, but they're all over the city. They attack at four main areas: Vaver Gate, Crow Gate, Hieronymo Sondar Gate, and the Spoil.
I'm going to go on this again. Because they didn't do anything, they didn't do any countercharge, they didn't do any bombardment, they didn't focus on the forces that are attacking, are able to effectively surround the city and do whatever the hell they want. And they also, they're dug in. Their siege engines and stuff are just dug in with absolutely no issues.
Yeah. And they're coming in at full force.
Yeah.
So they're hitting all four spots at the same time. And this is obviously a probing assault, but it's still a full assault. And the defenders are not prepared for this. So these crab walkers, by the way, are very well armored. And they're just shrugging munitions that are coming into them and firing back into them. And the defenders are terrible. They're missing with all of their shots. Everything is going to crap. And in the case of Vaver Gate, the enemy actually breaches the gate with one of the defilers. The defenders end up destroying it, but they end up having to repair the gate, sort of. It's actually jammed open because
there's a defiler
inside of it. But they are able to repel
This is a nightmare.
Chaos.
The command of PDF of the Defense Force, the Planetary Defense Force, is horrific because they talk a lot about the communications and everything, and people are just screaming into comms. Ah, yeah. That's about it. Yeah. Like no information whatsoever. They are poorly trained. Well, the Gaunts, while everybody in the Tanith First is pretty cool, they're, you know, they're helping the citizens, stuff like that, these guys are pretty angry with these guys, the Defense Force, and they make note of it. There's multiple times in the book where they're just kind of like, hey man, get your shit together, basically.
What they actually do is, it's not just the Tanith, but also I believe the Vulpine did this too. They actually made a side communication channel.
Yes.
Of their own.
They cut them off.
Because they couldn't use the open Vox channel anymore because it got so corrupted. They noticed in the first assault. So we fast forward a little bit. 6 days later, a massive artillery barrage kicks off again. And this time, it's not targeting the void shield, though. They'd actually moved their artillery further up, and they were targeting the towers on top of the gates.
Again,
because if you put enough munitions through and you kind of angle them down, they will penetrate a void shield. And they start ripping apart, and they're only targeting Vayver Gate, the one that had been jammed open.
It also, again, if they would have done an assault, but whatever. Let's go ahead.
Yeah. So the defenders on the plus side can return fire into said artillery, which they did, but the numbers just weren't in their favor. This artillery starts pulling down all of the stuff around Vayver Gate. And then immediately the ground force. There's no 5-day pause now. The ground forces come rushing in. Siege engines come through. And this is a, air quotes here, repaired gate. Vayver Gate is very quickly getting overrun. At the same time, forces are hitting other parts of the city, but it's just more to create confusion. The main thrust is Vayver Gate, but they're hitting other spots. And this does cause incredible confusion. The defenders need to get all of their stuff down to Vayver Gate, but they discover an issue. Well, not discover, same issue as before. As this whole attack's taking place and they're trying to move stuff around, it just turns into a giant traffic jam, a horrifying traffic jam. And the way that the rules are, it's up to the PDF to coordinate the movement around. And this Vox channel is just completely out of control. It's everyone just yelling, screaming. And there's a man named Colonel Modiel who is overseeing all of this. And he's in the command center and everyone's yelling and screaming. And he decides that the best solution to this is just to do the line from Airplane. Jump don't want no help, jump don't get the help. And turns off the Vox. Now, luckily for the defenders, the Tanith, like we said before, saw this coming. And the ones holding Vayver Gate had made their own Vox communication. So they actually were still keeping up communication during this. So despite the fact that the Vox channel had just been effectively turned off, and it, when it was almost was anarchy, the Tanith were able to move around and keep defenses going. At the same time, Gaunt is not going to let this stuff happen. As Gaunt discovers this stuff's the channel's been turned off, he rushes into the command center and confronts Colonel Modiel. And by confront him, I mean he shoots him in the head.
Yep. I'm not going to lie. I was waiting for my chance to jump all over this because I was like, a confront feels very soft.
He walked in there and said, "Pardon me, sir."
You're doing a Grey Poupon commercial?
Yeah. And then shot him in the head and immediately took control, turned the Vox channel on, and took control of the situation. Now, I should mention, this was a little bit late in the process. There are Pharazoican troops who penetrated the walls. The defenders...
Remember, the Tanith have already had their own secret channel, period.
All yeah, right. But they've had this. But what happens is the Pharazoicans do get in. This is the first time anyone gets to see what the Pharazoicans are. And so we talked about this when we did the Vrax cast. Usually Chaos troops get a little bit... Let's go jacked up. They look a little bit wonky. And these ones very much so were. These, they take the mask off. It's one of those, you know, sci-fi reveals. They take the mask off and these people have implantations all over their heads. It's men, women, adolescent children, and it's mind control implantation. They're digital mind slaves.
They're slaves.
So it's not, yeah, but it's technology.
It's again, it's, they're basically using ADMAC versions, again, somebody yep. that wasn't from. And they've got mind control. They've chipped everybody. And it's pretty gruesome how they do it, too. These are, they effectively just bolted in stuff into people's heads. Like, that yeah. that seems not great. Because they talk about big slabs of metal being in drilled into their domes.
But they are able to eventually repel this second attack. And chaos retreats. But now the Brad irritation will begin. Because now we've got drama, big drama. So, Gaunt just executed one of the main leaders of Varenhive for cowardice. And because he made out basically the leaders of Varenhive to be unable to handle a situation.
Which is 100% right. Mm-hmm. They've proven it.
And yes.
Also,
and
this gate falls. If Gaunt's ghost isn't here, I know they're the main characters, but like, if they're not there at this gate, the city falls from this.
Oh, 100%. 100%. But this is something Sturm was trying to avoid because he also knew something. He knew that the soldiers and the leaders of Varenhive were not capable of defending themselves. And the Imperial Guard were there to save them. But the people there thought the opposite. He knows that the people who are leading Varenhive believe that the guard are there basically as like an accoutrement to their forces. Like, we're, oh yeah, we've got this. Those guys are just there to fill in some gaps here and there. That's all in shambles now. And the leaders of Varenhive blow up and demand, air quotes here, accountability. And they want a trial of Gaunt. Problem is that Gaunt was completely correct in his actions. Yeah. And he had the authority to do it.
Gaunt, yeah. however, doesn't really rock the diplomacy on this one because he goes, yeah. he effectively, he's like, I'd shoot him again right now if he was here. Yeah. Like to all of those guys in the thing. Because they go, we want accountability. He's like, I'd shoot him again right this second.
Yeah. But the problem is that when they ask him why he shot him, Gaunt says, well, he acted outside of the command structure. He didn't follow the rules and therefore unfit for leadership, which is exactly what Sturm did not want him to say because Gaunt didn't know something. As the Pharazoican forces were breaching the gate and all hell broke loose, the city was totally clogged up. No one could move. And the rush hour traffic. And so, Brad, rush hour traffic is this thing when people live somewhere that people want to live. It occurs. So you can't get from one place to the other because there's lots of people there. It's just a thing. Don't worry about it. Toledo. It just doesn't come up.
You know what? I'm telling everybody a side story on this. One of my friends stayed at my house and he's driving back to New York. And he goes, Brad, you know, I'm going to work. And he's like, well, I'm like, hey, stay whenever you want. Leave whenever you want. And he's like, well, when should I leave to make sure that I'm not in rush hour traffic? And I go, today at any time, yeah. whenever you want to leave.
It's not going to come up.
Yeah, you will be fine no matter what time you leave.
So yeah. Like, I mean, to be fair, I live in Michigan. It's not much better. My friend of mine, my best friend, visited me from California where I lived for 20 years. I picked him up at the airport at 4:30 p.m. And he laughed the entire drive from the airport to my house at going, this is rush hour traffic. And we both just had a great giggle at it. Yeah.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
August is the perfect time to hit reset before the autumn rush begins. And honestly, I can't think of a better place to start than my closet. That's why I love shopping at Quince. Quince specializes in everyday staples that work harder, like their ultra soft organic cotton tees and premium Mongolian cashmere sweaters. They're versatile, timeless, and transition seamlessly from a casual workday to a dinner out. If you're still hanging on to the same worn-out basics, Quince makes it easy to upgrade. They have premium denim, tailored chinos from just $60 with the kind of perfect fit, structure, and high-quality fabrics you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. But everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They work directly with ethical factories to cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. I can say from experience that I'm a huge fan of their Comfort Stretch traveler pants. I got one and then immediately ordered a second to help replace my stuffy suits I was wearing to work events. They're comfortable, they're stretchy, and I still look professional. And they've been a very welcome addition to my wardrobe, allowing me to be much more comfortable while actually looking better and more relaxed on work trips. And it's not just clothing. Quince also has hotel quality bedding and bath essentials from premium cookware and travel must-haves. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/40klore. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/40klore.
Anyway, during this whole process, when Modil gave up on everything, everything's congested, General Grismond and his Narmenian armored needed, their viewpoint was traffic is stupid. We're not doing this. So they just made their own alternative route and drove around the traffic, kind of driving through the hive.
They 100% drove through the hive. They drove through houses, yeah, basically.
Yeah, it was helpful. But the problem is that he got arrested for this. And this put, because he did the thing that Gaunt just killed Modil for. He disobeyed direct orders. He was told to take route A, and he went with route go F yourself. I'm going this way because I've got a tank. Sturm's in a difficult position now. It's obvious to him that the leaders of Varenhive would rather die than be embarrassed. And they're making it pretty clear to him that their forces will not fight at all unless they are told that they are pretty, pretty princesses.
This is insane. By the way, this is a long time in this. There's a lot.
Yeah, this is a long, which is moronic.
Yeah, it's Sturm, infuriating on this. So.
Yeah. So Sturm has to leave General Grismond, who's the head of one of the most important parts of their defenses, their armored division, imprisoned for a trial that he's going to lose and be executed for. All right. So let's move forward a little bit further. So the second siege, that was broken, but the Pharazoican forces are now very close to the wall. So close to the wall that their Vox communications can be heard, or more importantly, their Vox broadcast can be heard. Because I don't think that they weren't listening in on it. Because yeah,
because it's chanting. They're just chanting Asphodel's name. Yeah,
they're saying Asphodel, Asphodel, yeah. Asphodel, Asphodel. And we talked about Asphodel last cast, so I'm not going to jump into him a lot here, but I just wanted, what needs to matter about him is the Imperium knew who he was. This is not an unknown lieutenant who's risen up post the death of Nadzibar. This was someone who is an Imperial target. They have actually been hunting him down. So, fun side note, they do send communication out saying, hey, Asphodel's here. This shifts the narrative a little bit. For Sandar and the leaders of the Hive, they don't really care. They're just like, all right, some Chaos Lords here. What of it? Sturm, though, starts to freak out. Sturm has been questioning himself and his capabilities for a while. He was deployed to this planet, you know, expecting a win. He gets the planet.
Whoa. He's deployed to this planet expecting an easy win, a cake win.
Exactly.
Basically, I'm coming off a big L. Now I'm going to come and I'm going to kick this tomato
put down
can.
A stupid civil war. Yeah. And knocks out. He comes down. He's grossly outnumbered. It's chaos. And now he's got one of Nadzibar's best lieutenants up against him.
Also,
a tech genius. And behind the scenes, he's starting to break mentally. Then things get really fun.
This is because I get enfuegoed so hard at this. Imminent doom is outside. They're legitimately bombing the city, they're crushing the void shields. And then we go to the trial of General Grismond. You're like,
yeah,
come on.
Gaunt finds out about it. Gaunt is literally trying to figure out, hey, what's going on? We're under attack. We need to move the armor. Where is Grismond? And someone tells him, oh, his trial just started. To which Gaunt says, A, what do you mean? And then B, well, who's representing him? Don't worry, Commissar Pius Cowell.
God, I guess a moron.
A guy who's light years selfish and not particularly intelligent, but more importantly, he is singular in purpose in kind of his regimented behavior. If he's your defense attorney, you're going to die. Like, he's not even going to defend you. So Gaunt rushes off to go kind of take command of the situation. As he's rushing, the Eastern Gate collapses, explodes. Pick your phrase.
All right. So basically, they halted all Promethean mining operations. So they didn't use their Promethean piping to blow up things. I don't know, like the Eastern Gate. Everybody shut it down except for one of these pieces of crap who legitimately came up with the excellent idea that once all this nonsense was over, this minor inconvenience, he'd be the only one that immediately originally had a steady stream of Promethium. He would jack up the prices and make it rain money, baby.
Yeah. Basically, the Hive has Promethium mining. And the way you mine Promethium is it goes through, obviously, tubes to and from places. So there's, you know, Promethium going underneath the city. Promethium is highly explosive. And someone said, hey, let's not have the explosive stuff moving around the walls. A-plus plan. And everyone said, yeah, except to Brad's point, one guy. And that one guy kept it going, didn't tell anybody.
Screw you, Ted.
The Pharazoicans had sappers, because that's what you do when someone has walls. You do sapping. We've had sapping's been around since, I don't think the Romans did it, but it's basically since the invention of gunpowder.
Yeah. Since you can blow stuff up,
Yeah, they had sapping. They go under a wall, and they set off an explosion. The sappers didn't know that above their explosion was a whole bunch of Promethium. It blows the entire Eastern Wall up. It just ceases to exist. And the Chaos forces go, well, that one worked, and start charging into this giant hole in a wall. And to make things even more fun, since Asphodel had come down to the surface, apparently this is on the other side, he brought with him, I guess, the guns from his ship and had converted. Yeah, I don't know.
This is so funny because he effectively MacGyvers it and puts battleship guns on whatever. He's just duct taping them to stuff.
Yeah. To basically just to treads. And so the other side of the Hive starts taking orbital cannons to the dome. And this is it. We're kind of at the end now. The Hive is falling. The wall, Eastern Gate is gone. The Western and Southern Gates are getting just wrecked by these things. And back in the command center, Sturm is done. He breaks and he goes to order a full retreat from the city. Luckily, he's not alone there. So we mentioned earlier how everyone in the Hive sucks.
Except for one
person doesn't. Yeah, Edric Crow. Edric Crow was the head of the Varenhive militia, and he's this great character throughout the whole novel because he's kind of sitting there as this passenger who's very angry. He's the head of the militia, and so as such, he knows he's the lowest ranking officer there.
He's also making random snarky comments during the book.
Yeah, he is. Because the whole time he's sitting there going like, I realize I'm not in charge, but you guys are effing morons. And it's driving him insane. And he just sits there, but he's this extremely capable leader. The militia loves him. He's this great guy. And as Sturm goes to order the full retreat, he turns to him and says, very simply, if you order that retreat order, I'm going to kill you myself.
Yep. he like, gives the whole stop. Ain't going out like that. It's like,
no,
absolutely.
I will kill you myself. We are not retreating. We are fighting.
He also gives him the bonus. You're releasing Grisman right now. Screw off.
And to his credit, Sturm does regain a little bit of himself and goes, oh, yeah, fair point. Yeah. So at this point,
I mean, sometimes if someone puts a gun to your face, you're like, you know what? You are right in this argument. Yeah.
But he does. Sturm grabs his Vulpine, like basically someone's like his honor guard, and rushes off to the trial to go release Grismond. At the same time, Crow heads off to go basically lead from the front the defenses of the wall. We're not done with him yet. Gaunt, meanwhile, arrives at the prison to break Grismond out at the same time. So Gaunt and Sturm both arrive at the same time, and they have to do a little bit of fighting. They literally do break Grismond out. There's a whole thing. They actually break up, and in the process, run into Commissar Pius Cowell, who, by the way, gives them a whole speech. The city is under attack and falling, and Cowell decides at this moment, you guys are weak, you guys are this, blah, 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 and Gaunt puts him under arrest.
Strips him of his commissar title, telling him, it's funny because he gives me the whole end of Unforgiven kind of thing when Bill talks some shit, and Clint Eastwood's like, yeah, good to hear, man. I've killed men with children. Cool. I don't give a shit, which is what Gaunt does. He's like, good speech. You're done.
Yeah, rips his commissar ranking off his thing and then places him under arrest, sort of, kind of. I'll tell you more about that in a second. Then he frees Grismond, who does this almost like Dragon Ball Z thing, where Grismond then basically runs out of the prison, jumps over to his regiment, and then leads one of the most successful tank attacks in the history of the Imperium.
Yeah.
Like, he goes to the Eastern Gate. I think they lose two tanks and take out the entire attacking force. It's this whole wild part of the book, also, is really funny.
Yeah, he also Tokyo drifts a bunch of tanks.
Yeah, I mean, he does everything but yell Kamehameha as he's freaking doing it. Like, it is the weirdest part of the whole book, where I'm like, wait, why wasn't he just doing this the whole time? Why is this war still happening if he can do that? But side note for different day. As he's doing this, though, the fun part is the void shield turns off. Why? Because Sandar, the leader of Varenhive, has been getting psychically attacked the whole time. And the Chaos Forces are just telling him all these things. And eventually he goes, yeah, okay, yeah, fair enough. And decides to give in to the promises of Chaos to save himself.
Which is crazy. In the book, they only talk about this a little bit, but like, they don't even like offer him much. They just say that he won't die.
Well, no, they did. They offered him he could still lead the hive when they were done with it.
Sure.
We know how that one's going to go. Yeah. Monkey paw. As this happens, Crow, who we just mentioned, the head of the militia, knows what's going on. He knows exactly what's going on. But Crow can't leave. So he basically radios over to Gaunt and all them and says, this is where he is. This is how you do this. Go fix it. I'm going to hold the wall. You guys go get the void shield back up. And Gaunt, Sturm, and they have to grab Pius Cowell. He's basically right there next to him. And the Vulpine rush up to go deal with Sandar. They brought Cowell with them.
I know. It's just, this is like all of the different action series where you're like, yeah, we're just going to bring the unbelievably untrustworthy guy with us. Nothing bad should happen if we do that, right? Right? Yeah.
So they break in there and immediately run into a problem. Sandar explains to them, no, it's okay, guys. These guys promised me that if I do all this, I get to not die. And they're all like, yeah, but what about the entire hive? And Sandar goes, yeah, don't care. And then they discover that Sandar has these, they call them flesh slaves. They're servitors.
I mean, they're basically...
they're Drukhari grotesques.
I was just saying, they're grots.
They're 100% Drukhari grotesques. That's the best way to describe them. Except they have acid blood, which we're going to talk about that in a second because there is some narrative holes here. These flesh slaves start ripping apart the Vulpine stormtroopers, who I guess had just finished ironing their red shirts. How badly they get wrecked in this one. It gets ugly because as they go to kill them, they discover the acid blood. This is such a freaking alien ripoff, but the acid blood starts shooting on them and they don't know how to kill them until Commissar Pius Cowell decides to have his redeeming moment. And there's a final flesh slave and he rushes over with a pack of grenades and shoves it down its throat just as the flesh slave turns around and literally pulls his arms off of his body.
Yeah, I was saying he gets beat to death with his own arms, which is a shitty death.
Yeah, so the beast then dies. And I have some questions about this because page before they're shooting these things and the acid blood is spraying on people and they're dying. And then this dude shoves a bunch of grenades inside of it. It explodes and no acid problem, even on the guy right in front of it.
Look, man, they just got behind their plot armor and they didn't get hit by acid. All right, move on.
Cowl is literally like a foot from the thing when it explodes. Anyway, all right. But they then are able to take control. They move Sandar. There's another noble there who's able to use his like noble key, and they turn the void shield back on.
Sorry, but hold on.
I like the way Pius dies. I know you don't like this. I like the way Pius dies, but I find this funny. That was why Pius is then lying there in a pool of blood because he has no arms. And
also, he should not know anything because he did just take grenades to the face and acid blood to the face.
Whatever, he's doing great. And Gaunt walks over to him with this like, hey, you're a hero now. And he looks up at Gaunt and just starts bad-mouthing Gaunt, explaining to Gaunt that thanks to Gaunt, Pius is going to die.
The greatest hero of the Imperium.
Yes, Gaunt, you have now robbed the Imperium of one of its greatest military minds. And this is a wound the Imperium will struggle to recover from, his death. And Gaunt, to his credit, just goes, hey, here's your pin back.
Yeah.
Like, you get to die a commissar.
Whatever. I would have peed on that guy. Screw the guy. He's awful. Yeah. Like, really, man? Really?
Yeah. But the work's not done. The city is still under heavy duty assault. The void shield's back up. Great. But there's still enemies in the
city. A lot of enemies.
Artillery's everywhere. There's physical attack going on. And the defenders need to rally. And coordinating those forces is a challenge. Here's the issue. Sandar's dead, which is, you know, obviously. Crow died defending the wall against chaos. Commissar Pyle, dead. General Sturm disappears randomly in this thing. No one knows where he is. Grismond is out doing his like weird Tokyo Drift tank thing. So Gaunt is the highest ranking officer available. And so he has to take command. But remember, Gaunt to this point has never commanded anything larger than the Tanith, which is like 2,000 soldiers. He's now taking over. It started 500,000. We're probably down to 250,000. But he's about to take over 250,000 and leading it. But of course, plot armor being plot armor, he does a great job. And they, you know, save the city for now.
Two books in a row, we've talked about how much of a tactical mind he has. This is not a stretch. Come on.
All right. I just say it's a pretty solid, like, first game out. That's the thing. But, you know, as the chaos forces end up retreating back through the walls for now. And for this, Gaunt is presented with something called the Hieronymo Sandar, which is a sword. And it was actually Marshal Crow's. It was his sword, which is a cool thing he did. But Crow knew he was going to die. He ran out to the wall going, this is not going to go well for me. He turned to his second and gave his second his sword. This sword is always held by the head of the militia. And he said, whoever takes over after me, make sure they have this sword because it's a symbol of the leadership of the Hive. And so obviously, Gaunt is the next one. So he gets it. And this sword is all foreshadow. So aftermath of the battle, Gaunt is faced with another fun challenge. General Sturm is brought to him. And General Sturm had been caught by a local police force trying to flee the planet because he decided that he wasn't about this anymore. And he wanted to run away, which is now we have a general who's a member of the Imperial Guard, tried to run away from a battlefield, and now he's standing in front of a commissar. Think we know how this one has to go. So obviously he has to die. Sturm asks Gaunt for the right to kill himself, not to be killed by Gaunt. They call it a soldier's death, although that's not a soldier's death, but that's a sign of a different day. And Gaunt says, sure, but does it after evil
100%
style.
Dr. Evil goes, here's your gun. You'll definitely do this.
Turns around and walks away. Yeah. At which point Sturm pulls the gun up to shoot Gaunt in the back of the head. And a little boy yells, look out, Gaunt. And Gaunt spins around and cuts Sturm's hand off that's holding the pistol before it can shoot him. There wasn't actually a little boy yelling that, but that's basically the scene I've seen in 1,000 shitty films. This was so poorly written. I was so mad at this scene. I don't mind that Sturm tried to shoot him with the gun. I mind the whole cutting his hand off with the sword thing. We don't need that. No one needed that. It's just dumb. It's a trope. And so Sturm is then taken away in, I guess, not handcuffs. Get it? But Gaunt is screwed. But we have to have a happy ending to this. And I don't love the ending of this. So we're going to get there. Let's go through current situation. Varanive is surrounded by a force at least six times larger than it. Chaos infused, armed to the teeth with arcane weaponry. Varanive is taking a battering. By the way, one gate is gone. We've got holes in the walls. The militia and regimental forces.
Everybody that doesn't live inside the walls is dead.
Exactly. Food is running out. Supplies are running out. This siege is basically over. The Therizorgans just hang out outside. It's over. All the Therizorgans have to do is not, I don't know, shove their Achilles heel right in front of the wall of Varanhive, and they win. Just don't take your only Achilles heel and jam it, I don't know, inside the city. So what happens next? Gaunt gets lucky with the daughter of one of the dead nobles. That's actually what happens. And she tells him that her dad had a special weapon. And they explain what it is, but it's a super EMP. It's a device that when activated shuts down all the systems of an entire city. And I could explain it a lot more than that, but I've seen Ocean's 11. So we're going to go with that. And she then just gives it to Gaunt.
So you tell John Cheadle to go do his thing?
Yeah. Yeah. He just gives it to Gaunt. So Gaunt now has this thing. Now, next morning, because remember, night fight's a thing. They couldn't have attacked at night. Don't forget, Brad, no fighting at night. Night fight is a rule.
Oh, so stupid.
There's no fighting at night.
Poison and night fight, my two favorites.
Yeah, so we had to wait. So now the next day we get the assault on Gondor. That's probably how I'd explain it. Gaunt knows that there'll be a big push. But what Gaunt also knows that Asphodel will likely want to join in on this victory because he'll want to bask in the glory in person. Yeah, and that's when Gaunt will strike with his secret weapon. But how? Well, fun thing about Chaos Lords is they're not subtle. So Gaunt just has to wait and figure out where Asphodel is. And as the giant hordes of Chaos just descend on Varanhive, a large construct is observed in the distance. And this mobile fortress is called the Spike because it's tall and pointy.
Hold on, I got to get my chi together for just a second. I love this book. This part's so silly because the Spike is the transmitter that's controlling all of the cultists because it's mind controlling it, and they bring it 4 feet away because apparently it's running it on a
straight up.
It's running on a CB. It doesn't have a lot of range.
It is terrible. So this thing's about, they also did have Starship plasma guns on it. So it's just like moving up and firing. It is kind of funny. It's almost like a Stompa in some ways, which is the good thing.
I 100% thought it was a Stompa on this because it's just got two big guns and it's lumbering up.
Yeah, just shooting things. So what Gaunt realizes, all we have to do is get onto the Spike, disable the Spike, and then all the Therizorgans will become disoriented and the Varanhive forces will win. So what do we have to do? Simple. We go through a few hundred thousand Therizorgan Chaos cultists, board the Spike, fight our way to the top of it, plant the EMP device, and then
victory dance.
Yeah, no big deal. We got this. Plan is simple. Spike itself is moving, is literally in the city at this point. It's like grinding. That's why Brad and both thought of Stompa, because it just felt like a Stompa. It is grinding
through the city, basically.
Yeah. So Gaunt grabs 30 Tanith and some of the royal Vulpine, because red shirts are necessary, and to go through it. And they're guided there by a Varanhive miner who turned militia named Gol Kolea. And Gol was a lifelong ore miner, but when his home was under attack, he saved a bunch of miners, and then miners let children, people with the mind, just want to make it clear, and then joined the militia. And so he knows, I can get us there because we can go underground. They can sneak us under. I don't want to know how much this thing weighs, but I feel like you don't want to be right underneath it. Feels like it might just collapse on top of you. But apparently that's not the case because they actually were in basically like the sewer system under a thing that weighs, let's go with 10,000 tons. I don't care.
The Imperium is very good at doing a couple of things. One is building wildly too big and too crowded cities. They're good at that. Come on.
Fine.
We're the best.
Anyway,
in the worlds.
This story is going to get a lot worse. All right. They do this. They're successful. They get to the bottom of the mobile fortress. Apparently no one sees them. And they start climbing it. And the story, this is so bad. One guy does fall off and they thought he dies. He's fine later with some augmentation. But eventually, after climbing for a while, they burst into the bridge and they have a conundrum. I guess the EMP device isn't really an EMP, by the way, because this is a scrap where they have to plug it in. And I don't like this because, you know, it doesn't make sense to me. Why do you have to plug it in? Because what if it was a USB-C and then you get there and it's all USB-3s? Now you got to go get a converter, you got to go to the store. That's a whole process. It just doesn't make sense to me that you would have to plug it in. Just saying, we don't have universal ports now. There's no chance. All right, but it is the right connection and it works. The whole spike shuts down. All the guns stop firing. The transmission cease. All of the chaos cultists stop firing. And the force field around the command throne goes down because Asphodel is right there. And he's not super thrilled about all this.
He has something to say.
All right. And I need to gather myself because what happens next almost ruined the book.
Screw you, man. They get to do a sick duel.
No, the duel's fine. The duel's fine. The end is bad. Okay. Gon and Asphodel have a whole fight. Blah, blah, blah. One guy's winning. One guy's losing. Other guy starts winning. Other guy starts losing. Blah, blah, blah. In the end, Gaunt lunges forward with his special sword and rams Asphodel through with it. At the same time, Asphodel brings up his pistol and shoots Gaunt in the heart. However, Gaunt doesn't die because Gaunt had been given a steel rose by a now deceased Lord Cass that he pinned to his chest over his heart. And that stopped the bullet.
I love everything about this.
Boo. Boo. I read this over a decade ago.
Don't you walk over my happiness.
It's been over a decade since I read this, and I'm still boo that ending. It's just stupid. It's just dumb. The duel's cool, but that part right there is stupid, 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 bad.
Why do you not love sunshine, puppies, and cookies?
That's a phoned in ending. All right, but let's get to the rest of it. So after the death of Asphodel and the destruction of the spike, the battle just turns. Mind-thralled Therizoikans, they're just useless now. There's no one giving them direction.
Didn't go over this, though. This is one thing I'm mad about, that little ending piece. I didn't like that they didn't touch on what's going on with those citizens, because they said they were useless. They were kind of wandering about, but they didn't say if they were like, why am I here? I was baking a cake. They don't touch on this really.
I think the truth is, I don't think the Varenhive ask. I think they just start shooting them.
Yeah. Because a lot of confused citizens looking around going,
there might have been followed by gunfire.
That's a lot of bullets.
That was how I interpreted it. They just shot all of them. Like, yeah, problem solved. Like, none of them are ducking. Cool. Yeah.
Because they're all looking around going, again, there was 25 minutes left on the apple pie. Where am I? Yeah.
Fast forward a few months later, Makaroth arrives. Late, but he's there. And Makaroth had heard Asphodel was there, so he showed up with a full force to come kill Asphodel. Only discover Gaunt already did it, like, literally personally.
I do. Yeah, I love everything about this because it's so Imperium style. You're like, hey, we've broken the mind control. We've killed Asphodel. We got all this stuff going on. And Makaroth goes, yeah, let's not risk that. They just blow up
the Therizoika hive gets destroyed from orbit. That thing's gone.
They didn't just blow it up. They leveled
remove it.
Yeah. Yes.
And then along with Makaroth, Brad's buddies showed up, the Imperial Fists, and the Imperial Fists, which I do love they did this, go and grab Asphodel's body, shove it in the spike, and they personally incinerate the entire spike, which is smart, because if the AdMech had gotten there, they would 100% start pulling that thing apart. These parts are still good, though, right?
They would have tried to reverse engineer this, 100%.
All bad. So they destroy that. But now Makarov has a bigger problem. Well, not bigger problem than the Civil War, but also a problem. Vergast was a hive planet, I don't know, less than a year ago, had five hives on it. Vergast, Yannick, Ferrozoica, and then what's called the Northern Collective, which is a group of other hives. But those are like a collection of small urban hubs. They're less manufactorum. They kind of made up the other couple hives were up there. Now there's the Northern Collective and like 30% of Varen Hive. So Makarov doesn't have the resources to rebuild this planet. It'll take generations and the cost will be incredible. And to make matters worse, it's in the middle of a war zone. So he can't really transport the supplies in to build it back up. So what do you do? If you leave it to its own devices, it'll just turn chaos because this place sucks to live in. So he offers the citizens this cool thing called an act of consolidation.
Basically join a guard regiment or get blown up. So,
well, join a guard regiment or stay here. But if you stay here, we're not coming back. And so but I do like this one because this is kind of cool.
Well, we finally get reinforcements for the ghosts. I mean, this is the first time they're going to get juiced.
Yeah, but I like this act of consolidation because act of consolidation is cool. It's not a press gang and it's not a new regiment. What they do is they say to the citizens, you guys can go anywhere you want. It is almost a piece of honor because instead of saying to them, you have to go form a regiment right now, which is kind of, you know, rough, or a press gang, basically you're part of a draft now, they get to choose. But to Brad's point, all the people there looked around and were like, well, there was this one regiment that was here who were super cool to us.
All of us. And also helped us, helped the citizens, basically gave us food, medicine, water, defended us when no one else was. So when they were given the choice, they went, I'm going to go to those guys.
Those guys seem a lot cooler. So they do. They go and they join the Tanith. And the Tanith go from less than 2,000 soldiers to over 4,500. They become a full-blown regiment.
Well, also,
and this sets
the Tanith first and only become less Tanith than anything else.
Yeah, so they're mostly not Tanith. They also get female soldiers, which is going to be a big thing for a lot of their later novels. Obviously, the Imperial Guard has female soldiers, even though they don't model them very often, but they do have them, obviously, because why would you not use 50% of your population? The Tanith just had never had them before. It's a key part of the later novels. Also does allow them to replicate. That helps. It also means, to Brad's point, half the Tanith weren't from Tanith, which does create some cultural divides in later novels. But more importantly, this is a major turning point for the Tanith because now they're big enough to be significant in battle zones. Up until this point, they were an ancillary force. They were being deployed alongside the full-blown regiments. Now they are a full-blown regiment. Right. They can actually go and do stuff on their own. At the same time, Gaunt is a big deal. Makarov just showed up on Varen Hive with this massive fighting force to overtake this Chaos Lord, only discovered Gaunt killed him. So
also, not just Gaunt killed him, Gaunt personally dueled him and killed him. It's kind of a legendary thing here.
Yes, and Gaunt also took command of entire Hive. He's done all these things. So the writers from here on out start one-upping this a little bit. But as we said at the start of the cast, this is where we're going to pause on the Gaunt coverage. There's 15 books to get through, and I didn't want to do 4 to 6 months of Gaunt Ghost coverage. So we'll come back to them in the future and cover more of the Sabbat World Crusades and more Gaunt Ghost books. Mostly because this cast series right here had two goals. First, for those who don't know anything about the Gaunt's Ghost, we wanted to give you a bit of a coverage so you kind of know when people are talking about what they're talking about. But also, I wanted to motivate some of you to read more of the books. You can go read Necropolis.
We left what we told you here. Stuff out with stuff. You know, we slammed into a bunch of stuff.
Intentionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get in my rants. I do stuff. I get excited. I don't know if you guys have ever noticed that in the cast. I get pretty pumped up about things. But one of the biggest things is there's so much going on. So this is actually the first book that was written as a full book narrative. The rest are like short stories, basically. I mean, Ghostmaker was full short story. So I like this is my favorite book in the entire series is Narcopolis. Yeah. This is a great book.
Yeah. And the hope I have is that for a lot of you guys who want to know more, there are 12 other books you can go read. So go read some more Gaunt's Ghost books. It'll be a while before we come back to them for a while. So let's have a chance to read some more Gaunt's Ghost books. But next week, new topic. And there's a glaring one that allows me to check a bunch of boxes. First, we haven't done Xenos in a while. And so I want to do some Xenos. I also do love doing these large battle coverages. And I'm playing Orcs again right now. So Armageddon. We're going to go do the Yo-ho Second War of Armageddon.
Gazgul, baby.
Yeah. We're going to the introduction of Gaz into the lore, technically. And yeah, this is going to be super fun. It also sets up because now we're on Armageddon 4 right now. So we've got a lot of catching up to do. But we're going to do Armageddon 2, talking about how this one came about and how well the Imperium dealt with rock. Big rock land on planet. Orc jump out. Bad. And also lets me talk about the greatest commander of all time.
Well, hold on. Let me see who you're talking about. It's behind him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I do have quite a few of them. I have. Yeah. That's right. You're right. He is. I have a picture of him on my wall and I think I have three models of him too at this point. All right. But with that, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.